Blog Talk Radio.
Echoes in the Dark,
The darkness within each of us needs an opportunity to be heard, understood, and embraced. So whether it comes in the form of a whisper or a scream, we will carry forth the poetry that expresses the haunting echoes within your soul. I am Pam Ray, and with me is my co-host, Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. Tonight is our dark poetry show, and if you find that is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everybody's taste. Also, make sure when you get a chance to check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And hello there, Rex. What's up, pumpkin butt?
Nothing.
Same old, huh?
Yep.
Yeah. I almost had a smooth flow there until I started trying to tell people about the books on Amazon, and then apparently I just got completely tongue twisted.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But happens to the best of us. You ready for a great lineup of mix and match poetry?
Yep. I guess a shout out there to, we got Harmo, Quicken, Rosie, Aaron on the board. Hey, gang, how y'all doing?
Oh, yes. Great to see them all. Thank you. Yeah, great shout out. Yep. Hello, Rosie. Hello, Aaron. Hello, Quicken. And hello, Zach. So good to see you all on the board in LNP. Very cool. Yeah, so there was Blog Talk was under doing maintenance on when we were supposed to have the After Midnight show. So we moved those right to tonight. So first we have some carryovers from the last Echoes in the Dark, inspired by the song The Cockroach King. Then we will go into carryovers from Everything is Relative. We have a couple of extra rights that fit with those. And then we have a couple of carryovers, or like 3 carryovers from different shows. So it really is a nice mix and match bag. I'm definitely looking forward to delving into tonight's poetry. So, what do you say, Rex? Let's go ahead and get started.
All right. We've got Love Against Cockroach Pain by R.L.J. Bauer. Pain crawls like a cockroach through my skin to my soul, to end all cute feeling that lives in my flesh like a pretty butterfly. But love is the roach spray that I choose to use to destroy all cockroach pain. Just by me loving myself through any disaster that might ever appear like a cockroach to breathe. Yes, but any agony just has to leave so that pain can't ever be allowed to breathe to win against my love for myself. Because my love is a positive butterfly that my heart chooses to play like a beautiful flute, so that my soul can always stay cute, but never be loaded with any dirty cockroaches that are contagious, like the flu is, and taste, and bum.
Great read there, Rex. Goodness only knows why I chose a song that had to do with cockroaches. Actually, because of the great lines in the song and how it works so well as a metaphor, and how it's not literally necessarily about cockroaches. But I have to say, and I know I've talked about this before, but they just freaking creep me out. The way they used to fall from the ceiling on me when I was a kid, the giant ones in Texas, and the most memorable, before I comment on the poem, I have to share the most memorable cockroach experience I ever had was I had a favorite coffee cup that the handle had broken, and apparently a cockroach had laid eggs in there, because one day I went to pour my coffee, and I kid you not, hundreds of baby cockroaches came pouring out of the broken coffee handle. It was the stuff that nightmares are made out of. But on to RL's poem. First of all, Rex, you did a wonderful write there. And I like the way he uses the scurrying of the cockroach to represent the pain that spreads within. It's almost as if the cockroaches, that representation of an infestation of emotional pain that will not yet let go. Really a great flow all the way through. But I especially like where he says, you know, just by me loving myself through any disaster that might ever appear, like a cockroach to be free, yes, but any agony just has to leave so that pain can't ever be allowed to breathe, to win against my love for myself. And there's an important message there that, yes, we're all going to have moments of pain. We're going to have moments of discouragement. But we have to remember that we're worth loving. You know, we're worth loving ourselves. So nicely written and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
Oh, it's a great metaphor, but kind of hits on that lingering note of what has been born upon the flesh. It hits on that idea of fear that lingers, and you still feel that brushed note of it, even though it really isn't there fully. You just it has that nagging tone of like that scratch on the inside of your skull. You know it's there. It once was there, yet you still feel that scratch, that skitter across the flesh.
You know what? That is so true. Yeah. And I like that. I like that you brought that up, the invisibility of the invisible pain that gnaws at you, and the way that sometimes you swear you feel a bug crawling on your skin, and then there's nothing there, that phantom, and which is a great representation of that phantom pain. So very cool. And what do we have next?
Commandeered Cockroach by Bill Tiller.
All right. Good friend Bill. All right, here we go. Commandeered Cockroach by Bill Schiller. A roach laid egg in my leftover gazpacho. I swallowed, shrank to the floor, singing La Cucaracha. My nights then filled like a wood chipper with unwanted sticks, sucking on toenail clippers, crawling on walls and garbage muck, feeding on rot under cover of dark, swat, stomped, caught in paper cloth and flushed. I was sent to Dr. Orkin, where my family was hushed. Gripping tank and spray wand, he said, leave it to us. End poem. I like the humor in that one. Dark and delicious. I don't know if delicious is the right word, but your thoughts, Rex?
Well, that opening kind of hits on the idea, the movie The Fly, where you impart enough of that DNA into your system, you then become that which has been melded into your soul. So in this case, he becomes the king cockroach. And whether he's just that that darkling presence that everybody's afraid of, that everybody wishes to get rid of as well, because he hits on that court and paper cloth and flushed. I was sent to Dr. Orkin, where my family was hushed. Dripping tank and spray wands, he said, leave it to us. The idea of, yeah, we'll get rid of them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment there, Rex, and a great lead-in to remind our listening audience that, or let them know that next week, we'll be delving into Writes from the Fly, inspired by Quotes from the Fly. You also reminded Robbie that he still needs to see that, and so do I. I mean, I've seen it before years ago. But, yes, so that's another great show coming up, and that contest is still open if anybody's also interested in writing for it. I like what you had to say. Very cool connection there. It did make me think of Franz Kafka's book about the transformation that he goes through, where he has this dream where he becomes a cockroach. But I also see the idea of the fly. Aaron says it reminds him of a C-grade movie called They Nursed. Ooh, that sounds interesting. That sounds really interesting. I really enjoyed this tale of transformation. It was clever imagery and metaphors. An excellent write that spoke to me on being silenced for being yourself. I also felt it was dark and humorous, and took a look at becoming that which you had previously judged. So clever write and very well done. All right, Rex, what do we got next?
Do You Love Me by Jim Bellamy. Do you love me? Are you the never-ending stories about naked pig and faithless sci-fire? Say you'll never ever moony crowned with lunar context and bitten fields without me, because I want you and I need you, and I'm there for you always. Sometimes I jazz is to dissolve of failures and ashy laces. Sometimes I walk. Sometimes I'm moony crowned with lunar cornfix and bitten fields. You're my everything. You're all I ever wanted. We could jazz us to dissolve us with failings of ashy laces real big, bigger than you ever done it. I want to moony crowned with lunar cornfix and bitten fields with you forever. I swear I can spend whatever on it. And I say the same thing every single time. I say you're the most caring for leaders with a Zeus swan along life's nippleback. You are the most caring for leaders with a Zeus swan along life's nippleback. You are the most caring for leaders with a Zeus swan along life's nippleback. You are the most caring for leaders with a Zeus swan along life's nippleback. You are the most caring for leaders with a Zeus swan along life's nippleback. Girl I've ever known, most caring for leaders with a Zeus swan along life's nippleback. I've ever known, most caring for leaders with a Zeus swan along life's nippleback. Girl I've ever known, most caring for leaders with a Zeus swan along life's nippleback I've ever known. I say it, you're the most caring for leaders with a Zeus swan along life's nippleback. There's sometimes I jazz us to dissolve as failings and ashy laces. Sometimes I walk. Sometimes I moony crown with lunar cornfix and bitten fields. But I never run away, even when I'm away. I'm on my worst behavior. Don't you ever jazz us to dissolve as failings and ashy laces without me. Oh, Q, my regal, devilishly dervish head wife. Oh, my regal, devilishly dervish head wife. Oh, Madam Masterful Poser to 199. Madam Masterful Poser to 199. I must confess, I still believe, the fever few gets crocus chewed. Give me a sign. And fun.
Great read there, Rex. Wonderful poem by Jim Bellamy. As always, he's got this deep, like these organized thoughts presented in a chaotic way. It's like almost like chaotic organization or organization chaos or whatever, you know, something like that. I really like how there's a certain lyrical and jazzy quality to this as he pieces together, it seems like, parts of music. Hard-hitting, thought-provoking imagery and metaphors, an excellent dark write on the struggles for faith in a world of failure. At least that's what it spoke to me on. It also spoke to me on the idea of the give and take of love. I like that he brings up the mythology of Zeus and the swan. You know, Zeus turning, I believe if I remember, it was Zeus turned into a swan in order to sleep with a nymph. That was a pretty much a common theme in a lot of ancient mythology, was turning in an animal in order to have sex with someone, which I think can easily represent our animal-like nature. When it comes to sexuality, I also like the phrase nipple back, you know, a long life's nipple back I've ever known. That idea of wanting the sustenance, like I think of like milk-filled breasts and wanting back that sustenance and wanting back that innocence. At least these are some of the thoughts that come to my mind. Quite an intriguing write and very well done. And Rex, I'm interested in hearing your thoughts on this.
It's a love song for his queen, the other cockroach, the one with that nipple back and the many deuce spawn little toddlers that come along with it. So that it's the dance of love between the king and the one he's wanting to be queen.
Aha. Do cockroaches do a dance of love? Because I'm imagining it right now, the cockroach dance of love. I will have to look that up on YouTube.
I don't know. Although most things do some kind of dance.
Oh, my gosh. I can imagine it already. If I find the cockroach dance, I'm going to perform it and see if I can get a mate. So there we go. But yeah, I liked that. That was probably much more accurate than my comment. But you know what? That's one of the things. That is one of the things that I enjoy about poetry, especially poetry that's more surreal or abstract, is the ability, way you get to view it in multiple ways. So, very cool. What do we got next, Rex?
You got Bottoms Out by Lafayette.
Ah, yes, and it is my turn. Swam your world countless times drowned, no preserve. If you were a cockroach, I'd take my time ending you, veiled creator. Instead, I suppose this is Hades, my existence illusioned as hope, times withered, lived so high, ecstatic encounters, crushed in miseratic goop, macabre, cereal, these slices run together against this flesh, crimson delight follows gravity, scars loved, treatment to navigate the scathing, any accepted and tried with vigor, no impact. Awake day after day, breakfast seems welcome, but no damned traveler. No path out, no redemption. Reality travels complex through my inhalation, damned. End poem. And what an absolutely powerful and brilliant write. And your thoughts, Rex?
Kind of likening, well, the bottom down offers up its own note, but likening the a life of a cockroach, which walks within the muck and the mire, the shit and the goop and everything else, offers up that note of the spreading disease, so to speak. If you were a cockroach, I'd take my time ending you. The idea of existence illusion as hope is that reality of if you keep repeating the same task over and over, looking for a different result than you are insane, but the same result happens because you're configured into a singular path, which you follow time after time. So the idea of hell and Hades in this respect walks in that note of always picking out the wrong ones that do that note of damp on you, and scorch you down into the floor. Treatment to navigate the scathing, and he accepted and tried with vigor. It does kind of hit in the idea of trying, but still walking that same note of insanity because you're still following the same path. You haven't changed the necessary thought processes to walk past that note of the evolution of the revolution that you are mired within. And because he hits out, no path out, no redemption, rally, lead, travels, leads, complex, that through my inhalation. So kind of breathing, you breathe in the shit, you end up being part of the shit itself.
I like that. I like that. We, what we continue to hang around, what we continue to breathe in, we become a part of. And I like your observations on the insanity of it all. I thought this really had amazing imagery and metaphors, was an excellent dark rite. I like how it was a dark rite that was psychological and made social commentary. I like how it speaks on the scars of love and life. Swam your world countless times, drowned, no preserved. If you were a cockroach, I'd take my time ending you, veiled creator. Love those lines. They're so biting, and they speak on the idea of either a relationship with a higher power that one has come to question or an actual relationship with another person. Letting it all go, falling into the mess of it all, trying to get through life, just to realize that one thought after another gets you stuck. I really like the lines also, live so high, ecstatic encounters, crushed and miseratic group, macabre serial. Macabre serial, I think, is just one of those great two-line phrases that should be a prompt for a contest. So, excellent write and very well done. All right, now, I believe, was that all of the
yep.
ones from the yep. Cockroach King?
Yeah.
All right, so now we will be going into Everything is Relative Part 2 with quotes, poetry inspired by quotes from Albert Einstein. And what do we got next, Rex?
OMG, I, by Mindshadow. Dear occupants, artificial intelligence is not new. From Alan Turing's 1950 positing to dragon naturally speaking to automated factories and onwards, we get better. I love my word processor much as I love my Palm Pilot. Neither do I use today. They reside on my museum of tech shelf alongside my pager collection. Word processor of the gods. Love that story. First published in 1983 in Playboy magazine. Evocative of Bradbury, Asimov, PKD, future-focused possibilities, fantasy, cautionary tale. The monkey's paw was cautionary, but no AI. Many iterations ago, I tried using voice to text, and who knew what mysterious outcome would result? Now I use voice to text often, and from my car, hardly miss saved of my profanity, but one could argue. The future has always been now. Still, the wailing and gnashing of teeth persist. Dumbass wearing an Apple Watch complains of AI. Alexa and Siri are humanized, lest we remember they listen, eagerly awaiting our command and assimilating data. Lies lie dormant in fine print and eulers as truth. I simplify, for I am simple, not a tech weenie or scientist. I am the Apple mission end user. No, I don't have an Apple Watch and get no kick from Alexa, but I am monitored by the government just the same as it has been since, you know, So write and don't write, draw or paint or do not. Incidentally, don't tell me about what has passed for art, abstraction, neo-postmodernism, pseudo-rational interpretation. Go to an off-Broadway show or a lesser gallery, people will toss a label on, well, a soup can, and call it art. I call it lunch. I would say no AI in the kitchen. You may nod your head, but I saw a $340 toaster on Amazon, and it connects to your Wi-Fi. Seems silly to rail against the coming of what was here yesterday and today. Want to bet on tomorrow? End poem. And mine took only two things are infinite, the universe and human stupidity, and I'm not sure about the former.
Oh, that's a great quote. Great read there, Rex. I like how he gives a nod to so many famous science fiction writers, all the way through amazing lines. You know, Mind Shadow, he's so hard-hitting and so edgy. And he takes a look at a world where, you know, more and more we're coming up with new technology. And I like that he creates a balanced perspective in here. He looks at the technology that is helping humankind, that is helping us to move forward. But he also takes a look at the technology that is downright ridiculous. I would say no AI in the kitchen. You may nod your head, but I saw a $340 toaster on Amazon and it connects to your Wi-Fi. Seems silly to rail against the coming of what was here yesterday and today. Want to bet on tomorrow? You know, there's just, okay, so I should say maybe obviously not everyone finds a $340 toaster ridiculous. I personally do. I'm somewhat happy with my $20 toaster. You know, would I like a $45 toaster? Maybe, you know, if it gave me perfect golden buttery bread. The thing is I look back and like my child in the 80s when like the microwaves first came out and they were so enormous and they were so damn expensive and it was, you know, you were constantly experimenting with what you could do with a microwave and what you couldn't. I remember one time when my mom decided to see if she could hard boil an egg in a microwave. You cannot. I'm sure you all knew that. But we discovered it by having an egg explode in the microwave. You know, great writing all the way through. But I really like many iterations ago, I tried using voice to text and who knew what mysterious outcome would result. Now I use voice to text often and from my car, hardly a miss save the beep of my profanity, but one could argue the future has always been now. I like that. I have problems with anything that's voice to text, but I've been told that if you just keep doing it over and over again. But yeah, a wonderful right looking at how people are trying to stop progress from happening. So very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, progress is one thing, but he hits on that note of AI small. That's why I went with I. It's that note of run screaming into the night. I. It is that note of
isn't that
of being
from a chased. Song?
Yeah, Ozzy.
Oh, okay.
But he does right up top. He drops in Alan Turing. It took 60 years for the Brits to actually admit that he existed and did great work during World War II, breaking down the Enigma code and creating the first computer to work it out. And he finally got on the board of Nobel and giving out the Peace Prize for. Computational impetus. So that was a nice touch up there because he still isn't thought of these days as because of his background. He was considered a criminal way back in the day. He was put on a blockers to suppress his desires because it was illegal to be gay or a homosexual man up until, I think, the 70s in England. So he got busted a couple of times, yet they hit it because of his prowess in mathematics and building the machine that would end the war a little sooner than it would have been if not. Anyway, the idea I get with this, especially with the big A, small I, that screaming into the night angle, is because once you let that cat out of the bag, you can't put it back into the bottle. Because we're already, you just look at what O'Keefe Media Group just put out. The admittance of one worker in the IRS. Although I said, yeah, we're using AI to scour everyone's bank accounts every single day, all day. And they've already...
Already
alludes to the fact that they've stolen $500 million from these accounts without warrants, without any applicable notion to the law. And it's not run by the IRS. It's being run out of the judicial department and that rogue gang of thieves. So the idea, and then there was that note again, came out yesterday, that Google had AI running generator. And if you put in, give me a white, you wouldn't get a white person. You get all the range of colors from everything else, but they eliminated white people off the node. So we've got Google out apologizing for that now. So the idea of who these idiots are that inputting this crap, even put, hey, give me a picture of Viking warrior. Well, you've got an Asian Viking. You had a black Viking, and you had an Indo-European Viking. Okay, they're not Vikings.
Right.
And then there was another one. Well, give me a picture of a Scottish couple, and what you got were two, one brown and one black couple, dressed in Scottish garb.
Interesting.
So it's all about the idiot who you're putting in to formulate the commands that run these AI operations, and then you're going to let this thing run loose, run amok, to the point where they've already loomed to the point that that is what they want to do in the future anyway. They want that that influx, that hookup, that transmorphology into man and machine, and then eventually just have machine take care of everything.
Absolutely. Great observations there, Rex. Yeah, it is very much about, because obviously AIs, as you were saying, you know, AI, even AI that writes poetry, somebody has to put the information in. And so it's all about the mind behind the AI and the information they put in. And I still stand that technology can be an amazing thing. It can really help with human advancement in the world. But unfortunately, technology can really be used for some political purposes and gains, by minds that are just far too, you know, dark and self-centered to use it for good. So amazing write and very well done and great comment, Rex.
I lost my train of thought on something there. What the hell was it?
Your train derailed, Rex. If it gets back on the track at any point, you can tell us about it.
I got it. It's that, yes, there is that note that technology won't inform. Well, what would you say if I told you that the cures for most of what ails us, we already have? but there's no money.
Oh, I believe it. Because I've heard that
companies.
For years. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No, I would too.
There is quite the note that they've got all the cures for cancers, diabetes, and a whole shitload of other things. But there's no money in it for them. So there's
exactly.
No reason to bring it up.
Yep. No, I've heard that for years and read that for years. And so I totally believe it because we are, and I believe it even if this had been the first time I hear it, because we are a society that is self-centered and greedy. And so, you know, I wouldn't put it past people in this society to hide away cures in order to make money. So, yeah. Very cool. Very cool. I like it, Rex. I like a good, interesting conversation. And, yep, Quicken agrees. He says they want you to come back like a customer. That is so true.
Well, I changed that customer into cucktomer.
Yep. They get a cuckold on you. I like that. Have you put that in a poem yet? Because if you haven't, you should.
No, I just thought of it.
Ooh, I like it. Well, you got to put that in a poem. It belongs there. Errant Panther says, I asked ChatGPT, an AI program, to write a non-rhyming poem just to see what it would do. Result was rhyming. So, yeah, completely ignored it as obviously still very flawed. I'll keep trusting my own thought processes to write until my time's up. Amen to that. Yep. And, all right, well, I suppose we better move on to the next right. So what do we got, Rex?
It disappeared, I think.
There's a lot of conversation going on.
Yeah, I'll say. I'll go back and get it. It was, never mind. I think I got it. Yeah.
All right.
Errant Panther.
All right, and this has an audio, and let me find that. Here we go.
The Riddle of Denial by Errant Panther. All that was serene, locked inside a repetitious song, deep within my core. Plays confused melodies of acceptance and failure. One dream surrounded by another, dancing through the echoes of reality. Loving hands that promised perfection now rest steadfast on the shoulders of deception. Questions frolic between spaces of consciousness, seemingly lost to the principles of time. Beneath every lie, beneath every trusted soul, there is a second skin of concealment hiding there. Behind that shadowed gaze is an unexpected truth. End poem.
Great read and write there, Aaron. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And just a reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem because then we can hear your poetry in your voice. And this was a pre-write that Errant felt fit with the prompt, reality is merely an illusion, albeit a very persistent one. And I definitely agree with that. It fits well. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, it walks into that, well, the riddle of denial. It is a note. If you don't dig into the idea of denial being a riddle that you actually have to unravel to actually dig into the truth, then you're denying the fact that it is there to begin with. and those that believe wholly in that note. And when they finally meet that evidence, which shows what they keep denying is actually the lie itself, they get crushed in the moment because they believe totally with such a perverse nature that it destroys them. So the idea of you don't, it is believe half of what you see and nothing of what you hear, and you'll actually be on a more tempered road to life, so to speak. So the idea is if you see something, you can believe half of it. The other half you have to investigate. If what if you're being if you're listening to, you believe nothing, but you dig into what you hear to find out where the truth really lies, and that is always secondhand, which lies beneath the skin. As he hits on the back end of this, there is a second skin of concealment, hiding there behind that shattered gaze is an unexpected truth. The unexpected truth being what one really sees when they open their eyes to the possibilities of what really is. And I think that's what Aaron is really getting onto right here. Don't believe the bullshit that you come across that is poured down your throats and through your eyes every second of every single day, because that's what this world is right now. It's little blurbs of 10-second notes that the mind is being bombarded with every single moment of every day. You got to step past that, get away from it, and do a little digging.
Amen to that. That is so true. I really like this title, and great comment there, Rex, The Riddle of Denial. You know, and like you said, you have to really step up and question things. You have to learn to think for yourself. But that title makes me think of the idea of like the Billy Goat Gruff and, you know, the troll at the bridge or other various stories like that, where people would have to like answer a riddle in order to get the reward or to, you know, get to where they are going, and how life is filled with all these riddles because there are deceivers in this world and who want to give us the illusion that something is science when it is not. They want to give us the illusion that something is truth when it is not. I really like loving hands that promised perfection now rest steadfast on the shoulders of deception. You know, how quickly people change their faces. And I like how that speaks to me on the idea that betrayal never comes from a known enemy. Betrayal comes from one that you thought was a friend. Betrayal comes from one who you thought had your best interest in mind. Some other great lines were, beneath every lie, beneath every trusted soul, there is a second skin of concealment. Just brilliant imagery and metaphors, and very well done. And what do we have next, Rex?
Weakened Attitudes Destroyed Me by Jenny the Deep. That was yours.
Ah, right.
Find something more than six lines.
And I see Andy Shaw came into the room. So,
hello, Andy.
Welcome. Yeah. Hi, Andy. Good to see you. I don't know if he's listening or not, but a shout out to him. And I guess he is. All right. Very cool. Oh, did I say hi to him? I must have typed hi to him. I don't know. I'm so confused. But anyways, Weakened Attitudes Destroyed Me by Jenny the Deep. Don't bother missing me. Just let it be. You say you miss me now when I'm here. Yet you're always too busy for me. Tell me, how is that fair? If you feel a punch to the chest while you are reading this, then this is for you, I guess. Maybe now I can be truly missed. I was exhausting, begging for attention, and was painful hurting myself over you. I'm done walking on your eggshells of tension. Maybe now you will see my point of view. I may have just entered an eternity of hell, But remember, I lived through worse. For those who still don't understand so well, I had to die to hear your loving, special words. After all these years, no one really ever knew. Liberated you are without the burden of me. You can finally focus fully on you. I'll always love you, even if you now hate me. My mind's manically messed up. No longer am I strong enough. End poem. Oh my goodness, I feel like those are some of the guilt lines I hear from my Jewish grandmother. But wonderful, right, with A-B-A-B rhyme. And your thoughts, Rex?
I thought guilt lines from a Jewish grandmother would be her calling you a mamzer.
Yeah, very true.
Well, anyway, all right. I'm going to go with the back end of this as being the proving ground. My mind's maniacally messed up. No longer am I strong enough. That hits on the idea of once being strong enough, but it doesn't really walk that path through this right from the start. Don't bother missing me. Just let it be. You say you miss me now when I'm here, yet you're always too busy for me. Tell me, how is that fair? All right, there's a note of weakness up top with that. Tell me, how is that fair? That note of almost subservience, asking a question to be given air to in the moment. It was exhausting begging for attention and was painful hurting myself over you. Again, a little note of self-flagellation. I'm done walking on your eggshells of tension. Maybe now you will see my point of view. Again, that note of giving in, a touch of subservience to maybe now you'll see, but it doesn't work that way. Once you've seeded your sense of self-worth in the moment, you've already seeded yourself to the back end of things. And that's where she hits on the back end. My mind's maniacally messed up. The fact that having seeded all that and given up free will, so to speak, she's already gone over the edge because there really isn't anything left except the questions, because they don't have any answers.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, this had definitely strong emotive lines. I like how it speaks on a relationship, and great observations there, Rex. I like how it speaks on a relationship that is obviously very toxic, toxic for both people. You know, there's the person that wants attention, and then there's the person that has basically just, you know, they're ignoring their partner. It's become a relationship of someone bouncing up and down saying, see me, and realizing that they're never going to have that, that it's time for them to move forward, to love themselves, to realize that they're not going to get what they need from that person. And I like how it speaks on, you know, a personal hell. And I also like the mention of walking on eggshells, because I've been in relationships with like that, where you feel like you're walking on eggshells with anything you do or say. And so I really like that line, I'm done walking on your eggshells of tension, because it really is the most tense experience ever. So definitely one of those rites, speaking on the idea of a relationship that just needs to go its separate ways because nobody's getting out of it what they need. So, wonderful, right, and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
An Owl Sonata, number 16, by Jack Blue. In the nasty night I found something like a ghostly soul or an enchanted ladybug lurking through my reverie, the sail of sheer reality painted by spiritual sprites. Actually, or dreamlessly, a genuine ghost of miniature appeared to be dancing there, outside my sorry sight of fate, with all the nuances converted into photographic fakes. Lingering persistently or hovering ridiculously, the shadowy blue ladybug or some ghost of providence frightened me or brightened me around its relativity. How was it alive or dead, somewhere in the silent noise, if I was dreaming to be dry or meditating to be mad, like a tree adrift in space or a sprite enjoying tea? End poem. Reality is merely an illusion, albeit a very persistent one. That was Jack's reflection.
Well, this prompt was definitely a great take on, or this poem was a great take on that prompt. What an absolutely great flow, wonderful imagery. I really like how it's a combination between Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream and Alice in Wonderland, as if the two of them got together and, you know, decided to have a baby, and this was the result. Oh, I see all poetry is currently having issues. Well, let's hope that does not take too long. But, you know, I always enjoy Jack Blue's poetry, the way he, good. We are back. The way, you know, he uses color and imagery, the way his words kind of dance down the page. And I really like this all the way through, but especially lingering persistently or hovering ridiculously, the shadowy blue ladybug or some ghost of providence frightened me or brightened me around its relativity. And to me, that kind of like speaks, that stanza, plus the writing in general, speaks to me on the idea of how we perceive things differently when the shadows start to dance around our rooms at night and in our mind. So excellent write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
It starts with that last stanza. How was it alive or dead somewhere in the silent noise? If I was dreaming to be dry or meditating to be mad, like a tree adrift in space or a sprite enjoying tea. The note to alive or dead, especially with everything that stands above and everything else before that, hits on that idea of not just the thought of relativity itself, but Schrodinger's cat, where the cat can be both alive and dead in the moment until you have actually perceived which of those is actually true. That means opening up the box to find out. But here, he said on the book that, again, something like a ghostly soul or an enchanted ladybug, alive or dead, a genuine ghost of miniature appeared to be dancing there outside my starry sight of fate. Again, with all the nuances converted like photographic fakes. Again, what is real and what is alive and dead again? Lingering persistently or hovering ridiculously for the shadowy blue ladybug or some ghost of providence. Again, life and death. So it is that shadowed in-between of a persistent memory that you can look at and still have those notes of alive and dead in the very same moment.
Ooh, I like that, the connection you made between those lines and Schrodinger's cat and the idea of being both alive and dead in the same moment. Very cool. All right. And what do we got next?
We have... Inert by Tamara.
There are no headlines, newsboys, or crumpled newsprint full of truth waiting to be discovered in attics. Journalism bought by corporations is written online, where inconvenient truth can be deleted and facts altered as often as need be. Neighbors no longer know what's happening on their own street or who lives on it. World citizens saturated in a brine of crime and told poverty and drugs murdered their dreams and stole their safety. Our souls are heavy, mule-laden with anxious thoughts, whirling amid an urgent need for action, held inert by the weight of depression, locked in social isolation, but committed to sending checks thousands of miles away to build cities while unwilling to spare a heart or a dollar for a homeless vet, a kidnapped child, a trafficked teen, or an exploited elder within their own state. World citizens villainize the single mom, the retired boomer, the millennial computer science major working two part-time jobs, and the small Christian business owner, and the migrant farm workers, while congressmen and women vote for tax increases, cut Social Security and food stamps, reduce national defense, and create another corporate loophole. We are aware of the privilege taken by the elite for themselves at the expense of those they call the workers, the human cogs in the wheel, too tired to raise their voices. They have silenced the voice of the people, and instead of enacting change, we are paralyzed by it. End poem. Those are some hard-hitting and powerful lines. I really like the voice she's brought to this. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, we were warned in, what was it, early 1961, the outgoing note of, what's his name? I can't think of it. President's name before Kennedy. Shit. Anyway, he says, beware the military-industrial complex. It is growing to the point where it will be an urgent problem that creates a hell on earth, so to speak. And that's come true. And the military-industrial complex is very much still walking easily across the world. And she got part of that in here. But it's also alluding to the thought of corporate and governmental industrial complex. The note of corporations and government entwining themselves to the point where they go even further than the military angle, because the military, you need to fight wars for that complex to work. On this one, you need to pay money for everything, for anything to work, from right down to the food you eat, as well as the taxes you pay for your home, on clothing, to everything else mentioned, that you've got to have heating, oil, electricity. So it all works in that notion of those who hold that type of power are those that are the tyrannists, the echolocationists of pure power in the hands of just a few people. And within those hands, they can do great damage because, hey, you can be deleted easily without actually dying. But in that deletion, you will end up dying because they can take away your right to purchase, your right to sell, your right to live. So that's what this is the deformation of humanity as a whole. But I think, Tamara, you're missing on one thing. People are raising up all across this world because, quite simply and purely, they've had fuck all enough. And they're telling their masters, you're no masters anymore. So there's a big change coming around the corner. It's going to take a bit of time, and it's going to be brutal. It's going to be ugly. It's going to be shitty. And there's going to be a lot of pain involved. But it's coming.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The people will get tired of, you know, being crushed, and they will speak up. So great comment there, Rex. Yeah, I really thought this was a hard-hitting right all the way through. I like how she starts speaking up on the idea that journalism is no longer journalism. It is, you know, it's no longer the facts being reported and the people being able to make up their mind based on the facts. It is instead those, you know, inconvenient truth can be deleted and facts altered as often as need be. That is sad but true. I really like also our souls are heavy, mule laden with anxious thoughts, whirling amid an urgent need for action, held inert by the weight of depression, locked in social isolation. Basically they learn to control your spirit, to push you down, to get you to the point of being controlled. I really like also how she speaks on the idea of the homeless vet, the kidnapped child, a trapped teen, or an exploited elder within their own state. You know, we're sending all this money overseas, which, you know, I understand the idea of helping those in need, but what about those in need in your own home? You know, like the idea of brightening the corner where you're at. And then the corporate loopholes, the idea of people, being paralyzed by change. But, you know, as you were mentioning, Rex, eventually they're going to come out of that paralyzation. Eventually they're going to stand up and speak up. And, you know, everything is going to start moving forward. You know, we'll realize that we're not just the worker bees. So amazing, right, and very well done.
That's called Bornalism.
What's that?
That's called Bornalism, not journalism. Max, Ed Rooms.
Exactly.
Turd-licking arseholes. Very well-paid turd-licking arseholes, who most have come out of the computational back rooms of the CIA.
Absolutely, yeah. Nothing more than talking heads. They have those strings in their backs, and somebody's pulling the strings. They're like those Chatty Cathy dolls. So.
Well, actually, they are, because if you go when there's a big story out and they're all on the same page rolling forth, you go between ABC, NBC, CBS, MSNBC, CNN, and the likes. You can run through all of them at the same time, at the same hour, and they will all use the very same buzzwords in the same connected order.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and those buzzwords are exactly what get the masses riled up. So, absolutely, absolutely. Well, what do we got next, Rex?
All right. Foresights by Jessica C. Wheeler. I ponder the echoes of brilliant words that bloom from past ponderings, as if you knew a secret told by the universe, whispered upon conception to brew in your growing mind. Your source never revealed, as your theories wove and latched, subtle as oxygen, penetrating to run through veins. The world, once perceived, has shifted, yet the markings of your mind, etched deep, will persist in every tomorrow. Still, I ponder how you could know what could not have been known, as the proof piles high in theories not disproven. A brand of genius sharp enough to pierce the veil of time, with eyes that saw a world so far beyond their own horizon.
Great read there, Rex. And what a wonderful write by Jessica C. Wheeler. I really enjoy that she puts inspired by prompts 1 through 10. I couldn't choose, LOL. I understand that. And, you know, I like the imagery in this, how thoughtful the lines are, how it, to me, pays tribute to the mind of Albert Einstein, who was a bit of a different character. You know, it was it's interesting. You know, it's always interesting to me how he didn't even talk until he was like 4 years old, but within there, you know, was this mind that saw things in such a different way. He was one of those who, while he wasn't particularly religious himself, he didn't completely dismiss the idea of faith. And, you know, of course, I think that not only does it speak on Albert Einstein, but so many of the other scientists throughout history who have looked at the potential that's out there for us to see more, to know more. I really like where she says, the world once perceived has shifted, yet the markings of your mind etched deep will persist in every tomorrow. Still, I ponder how you could know what could not have been known, as the proof piles high in theories not disproven. And I like that because, you know, it speaks to me on the idea that, you know, there have been theories that have come and gone, you know, and the thing is, there's always going to be those theories that get disproven, and there's always going to be those ones that stand the test of time. So, wonderful, right, and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, Einstein did believe in God. Not per se the God that everybody hits on with the thought of fates and actions of human beings. His order of what God is the one who reveals himself in the orderly harmony of what exists. And that note to he wants to know what the mind of God is. He says everything else past that is details. And what is the mind of God? It's consciousness. That note to where the mind is that last vestige of God, so to speak, that is within us, besides the soul itself. Anyway, I agree with you. This note to this thought Jessica put together is all about Einstein. Yes, he put forth vast ideas that took decades to actually be proven because he was that far ahead of the natural order of the rest of the world itself. I mean, look at the relativity, his general relativity. Was it 1904? I think he wrote 1908. He wrote those papers. Yet it took into the 20s to actually 1928, somewhere around there, to prove the point of part of the universe works is that mass bends the universe. Thereby, you had to have a full eclipse of the sun to see the object behind the sun because of the curvature of the sun and the weight within its volume that bends the space around it. So it took like two decades for that. And even going into the 50s, other theories it put forth were still being found out to be truth in their logic and reasoning. So a nice piece just on the thought of Einstein himself. Thank you, Jeff.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Wonderful comment there, Rex. Very cool. And what do we got next?
Artifacts of Decimation by Blossom Rankin.
All right. We eat, sleep, beg, starve, artifice raw like pollutants breathe, the chemtrails radioactive, immunity primitive like the ecosystem to techno warfare, sonar blasting the seas, oil spills invest welfare like the burning crops harvest, empires built from the hungry. It's a manufactured lie, bonafide to the metal strip core of its paper bill when held to the light. It's demolition, massacre, genocide, disease, bread, ban the cure. It's frail like the body's ether to ashes. Incinerate death. Reality is this life. End poem. And she wrote to prompt 5, which was, again, reality is merely an illusion, albeit a very persistent one. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, she bites at the back end of this, which is where you look at the idea of chemtrails. People keep denying them, yet they are being used, and people forget what's in them. But it's barium and aluminum. And that the funny thing is, they add up to one word, B-A-A-L, Baal, something, an old, decrepit Egyptian god, which has its sense in evility. Sonar blasting the seas. Again, yes. There's also that note to forget what it is now, but there's a huge sonar thing that is used. I mean, it was heard, it woke people in Canada years and years ago. They tried blaming it on something else, but all of a sudden it just disappeared for a while. The idea of what can be pounded to the ground and it travels and the disruption it causes in life. Let's see. Empire is built from Hungary, yes, stealing, manufactured. The manufactured lie, bona fide for the metal strip core of its paper bill when held to the light. Well, that comes right back to the angle of inflation at the moment, because that dollar bill ain't worth shit. And it hasn't been since 1971 when they took us off the gold standard so they could print like wildfire and those who could covet could steal. So, nicely done, Blossom.
Absolutely, absolutely. Great comment there, Rex. And Quicken said, I had seen a video of them releasing chemtrails. It's chilling how it captures the destruction from poisoned skies to ravaged seas, all wrapped up in lies or souls. So, great comment there, too. Yeah, this is some powerful lines. The imagery, the, you know, really just paints a raw and ugly reality. I really like how she writes about the lies that were fed in order to cover up the guilt of those of a world of destruction and madness and greed. And, you know, how, again, another one that speaks on those who don't want the truth to be seen. And wonderful lines all the way through, but I especially like oil spills invest welfare like the burning crops harvest empires built from the hungry. It's a manufactured lie, bona fide to the metal strip core of its paper bill when held to the light. I like how that speaks on the idea of greasing the right palms and getting away with shit. So amazing write and very well done. And what do we have next, Rex?
It was not a good week for old Joe by R. LaBarge. When dementia got you down, yell at everyone around. Talk to leaders decades dead. Store our records in your shed. Have your wife walk you around. Mumble every time you speak. From your cue cards, take a peek. Watch your step or down you go. Call Egyptian, Mexico. Wear depends in case you leak. As years jumble together, they've got you on a tether. And friends will now abandon the guy we know as Brandon. Your gravitas, a feather. End poem.
Great read there, Rex. And as always, a wonderful rhyming poem by R. LaBarge. Great to see him in this contest. And he wrote to prompt 7, which is, whoever is careless with the truth in small matters, to not be trusted in important matters. And I really like the dark humor of this. All the way through. The opening lines are great. When dementia got you down, yell at everyone around, talk to leaders, decades dead, store our records in your shed, have your wife walk you around, mumble every time you speak, from your cue cards, take a peek. Great lines all the way through, and a different approach to the prompt. I like how it speaks on the idea of those who just I know he mentions dementia, and I get that, and I get that, on the surface, obviously, it's that idea of how somebody with dementia can't necessarily, will unexpectedly say things you don't expect them to, that you don't expect them to say. But I feel like it also speaks on people who basically let gossip run from their mouths like diarrhea, or their sense of self-importance. Of course, I could be wrong there, but I just like the idea of that extra layer within the right. So very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
It's packed. It's funny. I like talk to leaders decades said, yeah, that note to bitter end. Oh, that was. And the thought that, yes, Mexico and Gaza were in the same arena. And the other talk to another deadly. It's not just about dementia. It does hit about the truths, the fact that he's been following these very same truths that he keeps purporting, but for 50 years has been told how big a liar he is, yet now he's being covered for tremendously, and nobody's talking on anything. In fact, oh, he's in such good shape. He's doing so well. Yeah. He's spry and he's dandy, and, yeah, he's running amok around us. Yeah, like anybody in the world believes your sorry ass, or please.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, I like that, Rex. Oh, great
that,
comment.
And that note to the depend. There was an accident in the Vatican when he went to see the Pope. He got escorted out real quickly and came back in a different suit.
Oh my gosh. Oh, that is too funny. That is too funny. There's this one comedian that makes the best jokes about the president falling down, when he stopped his bike and just tipped over, and they all just stood there with a shocked look on their faces. But I won't try to repeat the joke because obviously it wouldn't be as funny, but, it's all just a bunch of insanity, that is for sure. So,
well, how? Yeah. Look at the fact that, hey, he waited. He hasn't gone to East Palestine yet. In fact, he said he was going to make a trip, and the townspeople said, fuck you, Joe. Don't bother coming. We don't want to see you here. That's after a year. And he goes to Lahaina, 3 weeks after that place burnt to the ground. The first thing, he's got these big rubber boots on. Hey, it's hot in here. Oh, shit. No shit, you fucking moron. Please.
Oh, my gosh. So funny, but so true and so funny and so sad at the same time. Oh, man. Good stuff. All right. And what do we have next, Rex?
War of the Words by Lockdown Lux.
And it's my turn. Oh, yes. I should have that figured out by now. War of the Words by Lockdown Lux. Eons ago, a hominid invents a spear, followed by some who master fire. But the evil of war did not appear until one had found his heart's desire. Greed and avarice was not mobilized, not until a thought could be heard. Now with twists they can be polarized, and so began the wars of the word. Vocabulary is a means to dominate, which grows in abundance of egos. Insults start a fight at the garden gate, lighting a pathway of no tomorrows. No explosive wins the war of the word. Who would talk to an AI or drone? And once a fever pitch is stirred, there's no turning back to being alone. Some words grown can put up a fight, like frequently used love and peace, but these poorly pacify the ego blight. In the war of words, there's no release. And Lockdown Larks wrote to the quote, I know not what weapons World War III will be fought, but World War IV will be fought with sticks and stones. Words can break you too. So very cool. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, it kind of hits on that very same quote right from the start. Eons ago, a hominid invents a spear, followed by some who master fire, but the evil war did not appear until one had found its heart's desire. It kind of reminds me of that note right from the 1968 2001 Space Odyssey. It opens up with the hairy apes finding bone, and then finding they can wield that bone in their fist and crush skulls with it, and onward there we march, so to speak. And the back end of this also, some words grown can put up a fight like frequently used love and peace, but these poorly pacify the ego blight. In the war of words, there's no release. That walks right back to the idea of coming full circle to putting out the largesse of what has come before those first angles of self into what is now coming background to release. That sort of what happens after this, it's to the sticks and stone age we go.
I like that. Very cool comment. Yeah, wonderful write as always by Lockdown Larks, who writes with great rhyme and flow. I like the play on words in this. Instead of war of the world, it's the wars of the word, which is actually quite a tongue twister to say. And I like that. The main message of this is it doesn't matter if you take away all the weapons. Wars will still happen because egos still happen. And oftentimes the most heinous acts happen because people are bloated with these inflated egos. I really like vocabulary as a means to dominate, which grows in abundance of egos. Insults start a fight at the garden gate, lighting a pathway of no tomorrows. we definitely find ways to tear each other apart with words. And unfortunately, that happens even more nowadays with social media and trolls, you know, people using their words to tear apart and hurt within their stupidity. So great write and very well done. All right, what do we got next?
Relative Theory by Jody Melton. In the vast expanse of thoughts where past, present, and future intertwine, lies the enigma of existence, a wool so fine, reality is an illusion. Albert whispers, soft and low, albeit a persistent one, its shadows long and echoes slow. Within this labyrinth of perception, where truths and dreams collide, the intellect, a beacon, seeks to pierce the veils that hide. It probes through depths of consciousness where mysteries unfold. in search of that elusive truth in the silence it lies untold. This realm of fleeting shadows, where certainty fades and wanes, challenges the keenest minds to break the intangible chains. The constructs of our awareness, shaped by time's relentless flow, are but figments of our grander scheme we strive, yet fail to know. In the crucible of questioning, where doubt and reason blend, the quest for understanding becomes the means, not just the end. For in the pursuit of knowledge, where every answer leads to more, the journey itself becomes the key to unlocking the hidden door. And thus we navigate the illusion with curiosity as our guide, embracing the persistent mystery that in our hearts reside. For in the depths of our inquiry, beyond what eyes can see, lies the essence of our being, the core of what it means to be. End poem.
Great read there, Rex. And what an amazing write by Jody. Great rhyme and flow. I like how he answers the idea of reality is an illusion. I like how he brings in the voice of Albert Einstein. Reality is an illusion, Albert whispers, soft and low, albeit a persistent one. Its shadows long and echoes slow. And then so many great lines throughout. I like how he speaks on the idea of getting through the maze of shadows, getting through the illusion, and being persistent in order to dig up and find out the truth. I really liked this all the way through, but another part that really stood out to me was pursuit of knowledge where every answer leads to more, the journey itself becomes the key to unlocking the hidden door. And thus we navigate the illusion with curiosity as our guide embraces the persistent mystery that in our heart resides. So when we're willing to take that journey, when we're willing to seek answers, the journey itself becomes part of the answers. And I like that. I like how he speaks on the importance of seeking, of being curious, and not just accepting what's said at face value. So wonderful, right, and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
I like this. This was I enjoy how Jody writes his rhyming angle. It's always offset, so you don't find it at the end. You always find it hidden in the middle, and sometimes it rolls out to the end. But it always flows so well. I like how this draws down from the beginning, that note to the whisper of Albert in the first stanza, and then the labyrinth of perception, the fleeting shadows, the crucible of questioning, and then the navigation of the illusion. The idea being that is to use the mind, let it open up that door to that third eye vision. Is that supposed to be that note? Crack the nuts of that third eye awareness, where expansion within the mind itself opens up to the universe of possibilities. And that is the idea. If you don't question anything, then you're not looking at learning or even advancing yourself mentally. And the curious angle is that idea to the crucible of questioning. If you are curious, then you don't question. Crucible is that note, that boiling point of the quest for understanding becomes the means, not just the end. For in the pursuit of knowledge, where every answer leads to more, the journey itself becomes the key to unlocking the hidden door. That third eye note to awareness. Curiosity is our guide, embracing the persistent mystery that in our hearts reside. For in the depths of our inquiry, beyond what eyes can see, lies the essence of our being, the core of what it means to be. The understanding notes to who and what we are in fragile reality that we barely get to live until we realize, those notes of awareness at the back end of life.
I like that. I like that. I like that you bring up the third eye blind. So very cool. Very cool there. All right. So I don't know what you have next, Rex, but let's plan on, before the show ends, fitting in our one other SoundCloud, which is by Gary. It doesn't have to be the next one, but just thinking, you know, to fit in the one other SoundCloud would be good. So what do we got next?
Recipe for Mushroom Cloud by Patricia Batiet.
You'll have to read this one, Rex.
Okay. Recipe for Mushroom Cloud by Patricia Batiet. A mushroom cloud hovers in the distance. The lives that were taken were lost in an instant. It couldn't have happened without this element, a final solution, fake news not relevant. A chain reaction of aged old isotopes. Once they're released, we've lost all hope. Uranium the culprit with unstable properties, a tool to promote peace. An oxymoron atrocity. The dispensing of such power, Einstein was not prepared. An unthinkable act of war, E equals MC squared. The land was scorched, no life in sight. The war had ended, no one to fight. Years later, we look back and ask ourselves why. War still continued, and people still dying. And both.
Great read there, Rex. Wonderful rhyme and flow to this. Really powerful imagery. I like how she speaks on the idea of genius and science used for the purpose of evil. And the idea of the burden of guilt Albert Einstein felt. And how we live in a world that, no more nuclear bombs have been set off. Thankfully, as of yet, but we still live in a world that's violent and destructive. An intriguing look at human history and moving forward. So wonderful, right, and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well. Where is that note to dispensing of such power? Einstein was not prepared. I don't think act of war equals MC squared. It was a nice tone there. But, he did write Roosevelt back in the day pushing forth that the West needed to get into this race because he already knew Germany was way ahead of us in every milieu back then because people forget Germany wasn't just Hitler, so to speak, although at the back end and the top he was. Germany was also the thread where in each note of science, they housed all of the Nobel Prize winners. They were German. Their universities were far ahead of anyone else in the world. Their thought processes were far ahead of anyone else. Einstein was part of that clique over there. He moved out because he saw what was coming. And he also made that warning to, and now I remember the other one. Eisenhower warned us on the military-industrial complex. Anyway, it was... Roosevelt, that he warned about what was coming. The only fact that they didn't get around to it was Hitler didn't think it important enough in the moment, considering all the other Wunderwaffens that he had developed over the years. He had a bigger concentration on those. I mean, look at the missiles. They were the first in everything. Rocketry, the first in jet planes. Blitzkrieg, how to put forth that type of warfare and bowl over everyone. But the back end of this, yes, we haven't. The land was scorched, no life is sight, the word, and no one to fight. Yes, but the unfortunate part of using something like that is it cuts the war short by a number of months, maybe years, and it also cuts the death toll down as well, because Japan wasn't about to actually give up. They didn't even give up after the first one was dropped. A week later, the second one gets dropped. Then it's surrender. The idea of being willing because of what the death toll was already. I mean, look at, I think it was 60 million people died during World War II, and there would have been many more past that if it was allowed to go further and let Japan keep rolling the angle that they were, because they were not a race that would give up on anything except to the last man. Anyway, on the back end of this, war still continue. People die, yes, but that is the general desecration of humanity itself.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. Great comment there, Rex. Wonderful observation. Quicken had said, never forget and strive harder for a world where peace isn't built on the ruins of the past. I think that would make a great contest prompt. So very cool there. All right, Rex, what do we have next?
Got Holy Grail, Ken Smith. That one's yours.
All right. Became a Dixie paper. Oh, let me start this over. The Holy Grail became a Dixie paper cup with a pinhole in the tip, leaking water. Became a tiny garbage container for our snack wrappers on the couch. That became a holder for the cold gray ashes at the end of your cigarette. You smoked outside, getting into your car and not coming back. My Mary Magdalene, vessel of my bloodline severed. I returned to washing dishes. An old cup broke in the foamy mercury water. Two spots of blood dripped from the palms of my shaking hands. And poem. You know, this kind of reminds me of one of those songs, like there's a hole in the ground, Dear Liza, Dear Liza, or like the story, the house that Jack built, where things just keep piling up. And I will comment further, but I just want to say that, but I'd like to hear your thoughts, Rex.
Well, you got to start with Fort Stanford. You smoked outside, getting into your car and not coming back. It hits on that idea of I'm just going down the store, I'll be right back, and he never comes home, which is what that hits on. My Mary Magdalene, vessel of bloodline severed. I returned to washing dishes. An old cup broke in the foamy, murky water. Two spots of blood dripped from the palms of my shaking hands. The idea of reality opening up in the moment, knowing you're alone.
Absolutely. Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. Yeah. The idea of being abandoned, the leaving for the cigarette. My Mary Magdalene vessel of my bloodline severed. And that's intriguing. It's almost like you could imagine a reference to like the sacred whore. Wonderful line. What's that?
She wasn't the whore, though.
Mary Magdalene wasn't, she wasn't the whore?
Nope.
Well, prostitute. I mean, I don't mean to sound harsh.
No. Not even that. Even the church has abandoned that logic. They threw out there thousands of years ago to make sure Christ was a lone man without woman. Fact remains, Mary Magdalene was probably his wife.
Okay, well, she may or may not have been his wife, but the point I am making is that there are specific references in the Bible to where he's judged for hanging out with a woman like her. She was a witness. She was a follower of Christ, and, you know, the and she was judged, whatever she was judged for, and he was judged for hanging out with her, whether it was prostitution or not, I don't know. All I know is, you know, what the Bible has said. And so, and given that, I still feel as if, and you could very easily be right, Rex, goodness only knows it wouldn't be the first time that people have changed and manipulated the Bible to serve their purposes. But I still think that there's that general idea of Mary Magdalene representing both the holy and the physicality of the holy and the physicality of lust. And finding that those parts of ourselves washed away. And I really like the emotional impact of this rite. And the idea of, you know, because there's something about the imagery of the blood dripping and the shaking hands. It's like a sense of grief and despair that is so overwhelming, it takes over physically. So. Excellent write and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
A gambler's drunken best friend.
All right. And this is by Gary Rubin. And we have a SoundCloud for this. So here we go.
A gambler's drunken best friend. By Gary Rubin. Impulse, a gambler's drunken best friend. Oh, to watch another one crushed in the end. Felt today was his lucky day deep in his bones. Then he bet a long shot basketball team of gnomes. Old gray mare went off at 100-1. Faded like cloth furniture in the afternoon sun. Cornhole pockets emptied, not one winner, a sin. Tomorrow's a new day. I bet he'll be back again. Chopped like a walnut, he always doubles down. He now begs for bus fare to get out of town. Bookies will hunt down this broken, sad clown. He has a hunch. His luck will come around. It's a vicious roulette circle. House odds are sound. He places one bet on the chickens and one on the eggs. Bets against himself as the house collects their vigs. Impoverished deaths suffer 1,000 paper cuts, stupidity disguised as ice water, courage, and guts.
Great read and write, Gary. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And this was a pre-write that Gary felt too, and I very much agree. And prompt two is only two things are infinite. The universe and human stupidity, and I'm not sure about the former. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, it's funny.
Because of
and it runs that note of satire as well. The old gray mare, she ain't what she used to be. 100-1, yeah, that's why it's an old gray mare. It never finishes. But as you hit on that, the gambler's drunken best friend, himself, because all of a sudden he's got the balls, the pony up, and it's always a crush because he always picks the losers. Why? Because he doesn't play the odds, which is to never really bet to begin with, because the house always gets their vigs. The vigorish always comes home. Impoverished death, stuff 1,000 paper cuts, stupidity disguised as ice water, courage and guts. Yeah. It's all right if you've got money to burn and you don't, it's not a big deal. But if you're crying in your Fruit Loops after you've lost the money, then you really have a problem and you shouldn't be doing it to begin with.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well said there, Rex. Yeah, I too liked the humor in this. It cracked me up. Well, obviously, it was also about a serious issue of gambling. And as you were mentioning, Rex, those who don't know when to quit to the point that it's become an addiction, There was also such clever lines and wordplay, and I did really like that part. Old Gray Mayor went off at 100 to 1, faded like cloth furniture in the afternoon sun. Cornhole pockets empty, not one winner a sin. Tomorrow's a new day. I bet he'll be back again. You know, people put themselves through these personal hells and then just keep coming back. And I also really like how when he gets to the point of, you know, like where he says, he places one bet on the chickens and one on the eggs, bets against himself as the house collects their vigs. I thought that was such a clever and fun part about the idea of taking that bet of which comes first, the chicken or the egg, and deciding, betting on them both. So very cool and very well done. All right, Rex, what do we got next?
A Painful Secret by Ed Hunter. Don't hold yourself for me. What is real? Life taught me to cry. Just give me time. As a poet, I'm not going to make it, and I might as well get used to it. I was like a bad movie, only the prostitutes and adolescents with a stiffy were at the theater. I remember now, you were a witch and a demon. You maybe think love was the ultimate gift that anyone could wish for. However, I was an insect caught in your web, ready to be devoured. I was looking forward to you, but you turned me into shit. Today, I'm going blind, so I may not see you again, but my memory will last forever. A painful memory that lingers into the bowels of destruction. I was like shark meat, being devoured alive and still thrashing. I remember now you were drunk singing the song, Somebody's Going to Hurt Someone by Desperado. You look glorious and made me feel great, but you knew what was going down and didn't care one bit. Today, nothing doesn't matter. As a poet, I'm not going anywhere. Some people do make mistakes. And boom.
Great read, Rex, and what a wonderful write by Ed Hunter. This was actually written for a Twisted Tuesday contest that I ran with the quote, from the Little Prince, here's my secret, a very simple secret. It is only with the heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. And I thought this was a great write, but I did think it fit more with an after midnight show. And I thought it really fit well with this particular prompt, this particular night with the everything is relative. And the idea of reality, you know, especially when he opens up with the lines, don't hold yourself from me. What is real? Is something unusual? Life taught me to cry. Just give me time. Hard-hitting and edgy lines. I like the part, I was like a bad movie, only the prostitutes and adolescents with a stiffy were at the theater. That actually reminds me of a poem that Jim Morrison wrote, and I can't remember what it's called. It's probably called The Theater, or The Movie, but it was about being in the movie theater, and it had those same kind of raw and edgy lines. But really an excellent write on the pain of life with all its ugliness, and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Duality. Today I'm going blind, so I may not see you again, but my memory will last forever, so you actually get to see them. A painful memory that lingers into the battles of destruction. I was like sharp meat, being devoured alive and still thrashing. I remember now, you were drunk singing the song, Somebody's Going to Hurt Someone by Desperado. And there was another bit, what was it? However, I was an instant caught in your web, ready to be devoured. I was looking forward to you, but you turned me into shit. Hey, that's what happens when you get devoured. It all comes out in the end.
Exactly. One moment you're something that someone's hungry for, and the next moment they're shitting you out. So, absolutely. Great comment there, Rex. Well, we have two rights left, and I do not want to, you know, shortchange them on comments. So John Z. Henderson and Lawrence 67, we will move their rights to next week's After Midnight show on Tuesday and have those read at the beginning of the show. Great show tonight, Rex. Thank you, as always, for being my co-host. We had a great crowd on the board. Thank you to Andy, for Errant Panther, to Quicken, to Rozzy, to Zach. Let's see. I don't think I'm missing anybody, but those were the main group hanging out in LNP. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, is listening now, or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. Make sure to keep an eye out on the contests and topic boards put up by our late night poets, hosts, and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. You can join us tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, for Open Poetry with Fill My Eyes and Company. You can join Aphasiana at 12:30 a.m. on Saturday for Part Sinner, Part Saint. And Saturday, 10 p.m., I'm not sure which show that will be. I believe it will be Bad Company with Gray Eye Smith and Dan Deschino. But you guys, everyone can keep an eye out. And, of course, Sunday we have – yes.
Yeah, I think it should be Bad Company this week.
You're right. It is. Not sure what they're doing, but I'm sure you can check with Daniel Deschino or Gray Eye Smith and find out. And Sunday, our 10 p.m. show is Rhythm and Rhyme. And what do you got going on for that, Rex?
Toby Keith.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Such a sad thing, his death. I mean, death is always sad. But there's just something about somebody who is so strong voice, robust and healthy, succumbing to cancer. And, you know, I'm not much of a country music person, but I have to say that he was one I really liked. So I'm glad you're running that contest. Very cool. And, of course, as always, I have a wide variety of contests that people can check out for various shows, and I hope you all will be inspired. One contest I wanted to mention for sure is next week's In Our Craft of Fall Art is on Leap Day, and I am running a contest looking for fun or humorous rites to do with leap day, leap year, and I put up a variety of quotes that people can be inspired by. So check that out and be inspired. And thank you, Rex. Great show. Thank you, everyone, and have a good night.
Good night, gang.